it's Mike McEntee. It's the day after caucus. How was your caucus? Later on the show, I want you to give me a call and let me know what happened at the caucus you went to. 952-946-6205. Was it your first one? Was it your umpteenth one? Was it surprising? Was it dull? What the heck happened? Because these are all little pieces of a big jigsaw puzzle that we're still putting together to figure out what exactly is going to be, what exactly is going to happen here in 2018 politically. And we've been recording some of those today, so we'll be playing those back a little bit later in the program on your reports from the caucuses across Minnesota. Now, caucuses don't always make a candidate. A lot of caucus winners have gone on to lose their party's endorsement on the primary, or the primary, I should say. But those caucuses can break a candidate, and last night's caucuses have whittled down the DFL candidate field in the gubernatorial side from 6 to 5, with Representative Paul Thiessen calling it quits today. Those that got the most votes in the straw poll were Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson on the Republican side and Congressman Tim Walz on the DFL side. That wasn't a real surprise, but some of the other results are maybe a little bit more surprising. Joining me to sort through these numbers is freelance journalist, political and data journalist, I should say, David Montgomery. David, thank you for joining us here on the program today.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you on here. Always like reading your maps and looking at what you do. You do such a great data representation of numbers and where things are, and you got a great skill for that. So this is right up your alley today. I know, taking a look at the results, we don't have tons of numbers, but we got some numbers to look at here. What were your big takeaways when you looked at the numbers from the caucuses last night?
Well, I've only been able to analyze the results from the Democratic side so far. I haven't had time to look at the Republicans, so I'll just disclaim that off the bat. And on the Democratic side, you got to start with Tim Walz's pretty consistent win. Not only did he win big overall, but he won across the state. He won, I believe, it was ahead in 7 of 8 congressional districts, although the 6th is rather tight right now. He cleaned up in his home district, the 1st, which he's represented in Congress for many years, but also did well in the metro and in the other parts of the state. So there has to be, I think, a lot of celebration of the Walz campaign so far, which demonstrated some pretty broad support and sort of cemented him as the front runner, I think. But yeah, the other striking thing was Rebecca Otto, who sort of slipped into the number 2 spot in this campaign with a pretty solid performance overall. She was the only person to outpoll Walz in the congressional district in the 8th and was held him close in the 4th and the 6th and generally had strong performances around the state.
Yeah, it is interesting. Rebecca Otto, not always met. I think there was a poll here from the Star Tribune not too long ago, and she didn't really figure deeply into that, but she obviously has the organizations at the caucus level and has been touting that she's been winning statewide races here for, you know, several cycles and would do very well. Maybe some of that stuff, it obviously paid off. Whatever she was doing there paid off this time around. When you delve into these numbers just a little bit, why do you think, I'm interested in Chris Coleman, because Chris Coleman, the mayor of St. Paul, that's the 4th congressional district, but he didn't do very well there. And that has to be a disappointment for his campaign.
I can't speak for what they were expecting and how this compared to what they were expecting, but it was certainly not a dominating performance in his home turf. I believe he came in 4th place in the 4th congressional district, which is, again, dominated by the city that he has been mayor of for a long time. It's also notable that he's lost some significant endorsements from people on the St. Paul City Council. Many of them have gone to Aaron Murphy, who is also from that same congressional district. But Coleman was behind Murphy, Otto, and Walz in the 4th. He didn't do terribly. He showed some modest support around the whole state. So it's not like, for example, Thiessen, who bowed out today, who was good only in basically the 5th congressional district where he's from and not even very great there. and showed very little support anywhere else. So Coleman wasn't a disastrous caucuses from him, but he sure doesn't look to be in a great position right now to win the party endorsement.
No, and with Thiessen getting out because he had dismal numbers, it leads me to wonder if any of the other candidates are going to drop out here soon because of poor performance. My guess is probably not. I don't know if you've heard anything.
I have not heard anything. The next lowest performance was from State Representative Tina Liebling, who did okay down in her home 1st Congressional District, although, again, Tim Walz cleaned up with a large percentage of the votes there. And just a little bit of support everywhere else. But she's sort of been running a shoestring campaign, so could probably keep on going for a long time, take it all the way to the convention if she wanted to. I'd hope that she can catch fire over one issue or another.
Now these are kind of dicing and slicing the numbers that we have, but there's two big overarching numbers here, which is the turnout. How does the turnout that we had here in the Republican and the Democratic races compare to other years, and how do they compare to each other?
Let me flip through my numbers here. The turnout on the DFL side, if I recall, was pretty comparable to some past years. I'm trying to find the latest numbers. The results have sort of trickled out here. I don't want to misspeak. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that about 30,000 people caucus for the DFL, which is fairly comparable to similar years when there's been a competitive gubernatorial race and not a presidential race. Obviously, lots more people will turn out to vote for president. So you did not have the repeat of the scenes from 2 years ago with huge lines, packed rooms, when people were turning out to vote for Bernie or Hillary, or back in 2008 when it was Obama and Clinton fitting off. But compared to other gubernatorial elections, midterm elections, it was about on par for the Democrats. Maybe even a little better. They had about 22,000 votes in their 2010 gubernatorial straw poll, and about 30,000 today. So that's a bit up. The Republicans were down. They had about 14,000 votes in their 2014 caucus straw poll, and are at about 10 or 11,000 right now, if I recall correctly. So it's hard to say what that reflects, whether it's disillusionment or just lack of popular interest or just people, an unsettled field with the possibility of both House Speaker Kurt Dowd and former Governor Tim Pawlenty possibly waiting to get into the race, but not in yet.
Yeah, I was reading today, I think Mary LaHammer was reporting that House Speaker Kurt Dowd said that he, quote, has not closed the door on running for Minnesota governor. I'm thinking about this. This is kind of really late to have a field this unsettled. I'm trying to think back to other years that, again, a gubernatorial cycle where, and again, it's an open seat. So it's been 8 years since we've had an open seat, but it would seem by this point that we'd have more of a settled field on the Republican side. Maybe that's the reason that there weren't a lot of people showing up, because there's not a lot of enthusiasm right now for any of the candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I was not out at the caucuses. I was not talking to people, so I can't speak for how much enthusiasm there is or isn't on the Republican side. Again, it could be that people didn't show up because they weren't enthusiastic about their candidates. It could be they showed up because people are enthusiastic for the Republican Party, but not for the particular candidates they have now, and are maybe a Tim Pawlenty or Kurt Dowd could change that. Or it just could just be a fluke. It doesn't necessarily have to mean something. Certainly, if you're a party, you'd rather have higher turnout than lower turnout. But I'd hesitate to draw any conclusions about how the general election is going to shape out based on the number of people who turned out for caucuses on February evening.
Yeah, and it's again, caucuses, we talk about them and we encourage people to go to them. They're very important. But when we get down to it, oftentimes what happens at caucus doesn't always translate to what the party does. And then what the party does doesn't translate to what happens in the primary. Well, primaries are still are they still in August now? I'm trying to remember. I think if there's a primary, it happens in August, or did that get pushed to later? I don't think they changed that, did they?
My understanding is that the presidential primary was shifted from a caucus to a primary and was moved up, but I'm not entirely certain of that. But I don't believe the gubernatorial primary has changed. I think that's still in August.
Yeah, so that doesn't give a lot of time. Again, after after endorsement to get to a primary and then to the election. So, there's plenty of time after that. But yeah. It's a full political calendar this year. I know you'll be paying attention to it. Anything else that you pulled out of the caucus that you thought was interesting, or any final observations you have there?
Just to clarify, the gubernatorial primary is August 14th this year, and candidates who want to compete in that primary have until June 5th to file. So even though it's getting very late for candidates who want to compete for the party endorsement to get in, they've got plenty of time if they want to take it to the voters. Both parties, of course, would prefer to not have a primary so they can settle on a nominee early and focus on spend the summer fighting the general election instead of the primary election. But as past party chairs of both parties can attest, you don't always get that.
You don't always get what you want, especially in politics. That's kind of the way it works. David Montgomery is a freelance data and political journalist. You can find more of his work at dhmontgomery.com. And David, I appreciate you taking the time today to just go through the numbers with us from the caucus last night.
Well, thanks for having me on.
All right. Hey, folks, we're going to take a break. And when we get back, your phone calls, 952-946-6205. How was your caucus experience? Do you have some insight to offer to us that goes beyond the numbers that we've talked about here? We'd like to hear about it. Give us a call. We'll be back here in just a minute on AM 950.
Your home stinks. What, you didn't notice? Odds are you're immune to the smells in your home, but the stink is definitely there. That means it's time to bring out the pros from Zero Res to clean out the dust mites, dander, and bacteria festering in your carpet. This month, you can get three-room Zero Res clean starting at only $119. Plus, this month, you can still get a great deal when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. AM 950 listeners know I've been a big supporter of the station. I'm also a job creator. I've assembled a team of the highest quality technicians to ensure our reputation continues to grow. After all, a job creator is simply someone who responds to customer demand. That demand has remained strong at PJW because we deliver quality the first time around. See why it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
February is the month of love and resistance. If you're in the mood for love or resistance, Northern Sun has the products that can help. Share the love with a Love Wins t-shirt or a Love Your Neighbor sign. Be part of the resistance with anti-Trump shirts or stickers. Northern Sun's been the voice of love and resistance for almost 40 years. On East Lake Street or online at northernsun.com.
Auto Technical's fundraising vehicle sale. Our three mechanics have been busy getting cars and trucks ready for the Friday-Saturday fundraiser sale. Come take a test drive. Take it to your mechanic. You will be impressed by the quality and pricing. $1,500 to $4,000 Friday and Saturday. A good bet is Auto Tech. AutoTech.org. 651-646-7826. 651-646-7826.
It's Mike McEntee back here on AM 950. We are talking about the caucuses last night. We're picking through the numbers. We're figuring out what the heck happened. What does it mean? And I want your take on what was going on. 952-946-6205. Did you go to a caucus? Was it your first time? Well, I want to hear about it. What'd you think? Big deal or a big yawner? Was it complicated or was it pretty simple? What were the issues? What happened? Who got support what was the process like? I mean, we're all interested in that because it really makes a difference on how politics go forward here in Minnesota. The big headlines from the caucuses last night in my mind were that Rebecca Otto emerged as the other top-tier candidate in the gubernatorial race behind Tim Walz. A lot of folks had put bets on that Chris Coleman would be that person. Chris Coleman did disappointing numbers, I would say, compared to, you know, at least in terms of money that he had raised. And there isn't always a correlation between the amount of money somebody raises and the amount of votes that they get or the amount of support that they get. But that was a real question of whether Chris Coleman, the only candidate who has specifically said he hadn't decided whether he was going to abide by the endorsement, or although Tim Walz has kind of hedged on that too, you begin to wonder if Chris Coleman is going to, if he doesn't win in the endorsement process here, if he's going to go to a primary, if he would have enough support to do so. Again, what happens at a caucus is very different than what happens in a primary or even a general election. And then the other big thing I saw out of the caucuses, again, the numbers, and we were just talking with David Montgomery about this, is that the Republican numbers were down and the DFL numbers were up. Now, I think that says something about enthusiasm, and the enthusiasm has to do with a lot. There's more competition, I think, on the DFL side for governor. There are also, on the Republican side, two of the rumored candidates, the big candidates who might have statewide appeal, besides Jeff Johnson, who, you know, handily won the vote last night, you know, Kurt Dowd and former Governor Tim Pawlenty, aren't officially running, although we are expected to hear from Tim Pawlenty here in the next week or so. He's quit his job in Washington. He's coming back to Minnesota. I guess Jeff Johnson was joking, hey, I'll be glad to reintroduce you to people around here. But then we also have, Kurt Dowd, the House Speaker, who has been busy trying to deal with all sorts of things and has said he hasn't really had time for this. Well, time is running out, and he says he still hasn't closed the door on running. So it's a very unsettled field on the Republican side. Now, that's the gubernatorial races. Let's talk about the congressional races, though, for a moment. The uptake's Bill Sorum was at the Senate District DFL 48 caucuses at Eden Prairie High School last night. And Dean Phillips, he's the DFL candidate for Congress who wants to defeat Representative Eric Paulson. He had his truck there and he was out talking to caucus goers. And one was a retired Navy captain, Lou Ellingson, I believe, who wanted to know if Phillips was going to take care of the vets, even though Phillips wants to see the State Department funded. And Phillips says, well, it's really funding the State Department is taking care of vets. We listened in on the conversation a little bit.
Hi, how you doing, sir? Nice to see you. It's like three times in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Now listen, I've got a concern though.
Tell me.
Okay. Military.
Sure.
I'm in military.
Well, I know that.
Strong military is what keeps all your priorities alive. And I don't see the military here.
Well, I respect that, and you know how I feel about the military based on you know, my own story and yours, and we've been at the table together a number of times, and as I say, I mean, we need a strong military, but I'm equally concerned about the dismantling of the State Department, because every dollar we take away from that, we need more bullets, and one of my foremost priorities is taking care of vets.
Okay, this isn't code for saying you're not going to take care of vets.
Oh, well, you know, we've been at the same table twice with vets, you know, with Don Knutson and Bob Malecki and others, and I mean, you know how I feel about that. And these are very general,
Are you from the media?
Notions, and in fact, if I don't reference vets in there, I absolutely will. I thought I did, but if we don't, I assure you, we will, because that is foremost on my mind.
Yeah, and the current issue that is hot for me is the sequestration.
Sure.
Limited spending for veterans military now, and that's not the right way.
No. See, I'm going to peel up in that doorway. Okay, I'll be right over there.
And that's the way it was for Phillips last night, to lots of people to meet and talk to, as it was for the two other DFL candidates in the race, Adam Jennings and Brian Santa Maria. Now, we don't know how many delegates were chosen for each candidate. That takes a while to sort out. We really may not know that until we get to the Congressional District Convention later this spring. But there was another very competitive DFL congressional race going on last night in Minnesota's 2nd Congressional District. We've been covering that. We reached out to both the campaigns of Angie Craig and Jeff Erdman this, you know, today to find out what happened. Now, neither campaign either knew or would say the number of delegates they got from last night's caucuses. And as I've mentioned, it's sometimes you just don't know and some people just won't say. But the Erdman campaign says it had a great turnout last night, I'm quoting here, and the campaign is, quote, set up very nicely for the organizing conventions come this March. And the Angie Craig campaign told us she got very broad support in nearly every precinct. Most importantly, both turnout and excitement were high everywhere in the district. So neither campaign willing to say really what is going on other than, hey, things are going great. We'll have to see what the numbers show, and we'll be following that here as the weeks go on. Some observers out in the 2nd Congressional District were telling us what was happening. One observer says that in Jordan, there seemed to be support for Erdman by newcomers, which makes sense. A lot of folks new to the party may want a fresh face. But party regulars stayed silent, and a newcomer spoke as a surrogate for Erdman, but Craig didn't have a surrogate there. That was in Jordan, Minnesota. And some of the activists said that they liked Otto as their favorite, but they were very unhappy with Otto's public call for Franken to resign, and they were very supportive of Franken. It's hard to tell, though, that whether that changed their vote or not, because it was a secret ballot. Let's see, some other reports. Senate District 51, Senate District 52, and Rice County activists posted that they were very pleased with their turnouts, better than other non-presidential years. So I want to hear from you. How was your caucus? Tell us your story. 952-946-6205. Did something happen that you'd like to tell us about? Were you pleasantly surprised? Rick from Big Lake says that he ran into some Republican misdirection when he went to his DFL caucus.
Went to my first caucus with my wife last night. It was very informative. A lot of people there at the Becker location. But we had one situation that we were kind of surprised about. When we got there, there was people that were Republican that were telling us that the caucus was closed. It was canceled for the evening. Well, luckily we had someone come around and tell us that it was not canceled. Also, I'd like to make just one comment about Make America Great Again. I never thought that we lost our greatness. I think it should be America is great now. Thank you. Have a good day. Enjoy your show.
Now, in the 8th Congressional District, we're going to find out a little bit later on the program if there's much of a challenge to Congressman Rick Nolan on the DFL side. We'll be speaking to Aaron Brown. You may be able to answer that for us. And also later on the show, you may have heard this, that President Trump, not only does he want a wall, not only does he get upset and think it's treasonous if you don't applaud him when he is speaking, you know, to Congress, but now he wants a military parade just like they had in France, which looks a lot like a military parade in North Korea or some other country that we really don't want to be identified with. I'd like your thoughts on that a little bit later on the program. Does that get you upset? Do you think that's appropriate? Do you think the money should be spent on something like that instead of, well, maybe housing and clothing our veterans and making sure that they get the care that they need and deserve? We'll open up the phones to talk about that a little bit later, but we're going to be speaking with Aaron Brown next year on the program. We'll take a break, and then we'll be back here in just a few minutes to check in on to get an observation from northern Minnesota on what happened on the caucuses last night. Listening to the Mike McEntee Show on AM 950. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
So vacation, tracing a way through the constellation.
My favorite meal of the day is breakfast, and for morning vittles, I head to Milton's, 36 and Douglas in Crystal. My favorite is either the rib scrambler, scrambled eggs with ribs, portobello mushrooms, jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese, or the steak and eggs. My wife loves the pepper jack creamy grits and the stuffed avocados with poached eggs cradled in avocado halves. The kids love the French toast or the stuffed French toast filled with fruit and cream cheese. Top it off with coffee done my way from the Milton's Coffee Bar, and I'm ready for the day. Breakfast is waiting for you at Milton's, 36 and Douglas in Crystal.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
At Pride Institute, being LGBTQ plus is the norm, not the exception. Their highly trained and skilled staff understand your issues and will help you live a happy, healthy life as a proud LGBTQ plus person. They offer you hope to overcome your addiction and live the life you want. Their treatment programs are designed to assist you in developing the knowledge, skills, and attitudes for long-term recovery. Therapy groups include health education, LGBTQ issues, HIV and chronic illness, trauma, grief and loss, transgender support, nicotine recovery, education, and sexual health. Pride Institute offers a residential treatment program, a partial hospitalization program that includes day programming with lodging, and an intensive outpatient program. If you or someone in your life could benefit from guidance and coping skills, life balance, and other tools necessary for long-term recovery, check them out at pride-institute.com or call 800-547-7433 now.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more, visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. We've been talking about the caucuses, but there's been significant national news today, too. Just wanted to dip into that a little bit. A big agreement announced between Senate leaders today that they have sealed an agreement on a two-year budget pact, which is very different than what we've had in the past. We've had these continuing resolutions that will run for a few months, or as the case with the current one, a couple of weeks. But this would shower the Pentagon and domestic programs with almost $300 billion above existing limits, giving wins to both the GOP defense hawks and Democrats seeking billions for infrastructure projects and combating opioid abuse. Now, it's likely to be added to a stopgap spending bill that passed the House on Tuesday, and that would be aimed at averting a government shutdown tomorrow at midnight. Yeah, tomorrow at midnight. Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York called the Senate agreement a genuine breakthrough, and the White House announced its support despite huge increases for domestic programs sought by President Donald Trump's Democratic rivals. So we may be avoiding a government shutdown tomorrow, but as Donald Trump always says, we'll see, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Well, let's get back to the caucuses now, because the caucuses happened more than just in the Twin Cities, which we've been talking about. The caucuses happened all over Minnesota, and the caucuses were slightly different. At least the results were up in northern Minnesota, where Rebecca Otto, that was the congressional district that she won, and Tim Walz did not, one of the only ones, I think, that she won out of that. So it indicates the population up there is thinking just a little bit different than the rest of Minnesota. The question is, what else does that mean? Joining us now to talk about that is Aaron Brown, who you can find at the at minnesotabrown.com. He's the radio show host and a chronicler of northern Minnesota. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on here today. So did you make it to your caucus last night?
I am a convener of my Balsam Township Itasca County caucus, and I retrieved the key from the local gas station and performed the sacred rites of opening the hall and all of that, yes.
You got the key from the gas station. Does it still come?
Yeah, that's where they keep it, because it's open all the time, you know.
They don't tie it to a big wrench or anything, so you remember to bring it back or something, do they?
No, it's got a carabiner. It's a substantial keychain. You know, it's designed to be awkward.
Okay. So you open up the door, you convene the caucuses. Did you have a lot of people show up last night?
There were six of us at the Balsam.
Okay.
So now that sounds like a small number, and it is, but I would compare it pretty much to 2010 turnout for us, but a huge drop-off off of course, the presidential turnout last time. We had, I believe, more than 20 out, 20 or 20 or 30 even for the presidential year. So that's a big drop, which is not unusual, but maybe a little bigger than I expected for a drop-off.
Well, I guess the advantage of having a small precinct caucus like that is you don't have to pay the babysitter for an extra hour when you get home. If you
no, and many of the things that people find so tedious about caucuses, you know, all the resolutions and determining delegate elections, you know, anybody who wanted to be a delegate could simply have a delegate spot. So it was pretty simple for us.
Well, six people is a really tough number to extrapolate on what's going on, but you got
especially
a chance.
When I tell you that we went four votes to 1-1 for Paul Thiessen, who dropped out this morning. So,
well, there you go. So what are those?
So it might have been his best precinct.
Is everybody going to be a delegate then out of that precinct, I suppose?
An alternate, yeah. I can't go to my county convention, and someone else couldn't either. So the four people who wanted to are going on, and so we're all on the list. But, yeah, and so, yeah, it'll be interesting because, of course, the favored candidate went down today. So, you know, the first part of this is who people voted for in the straw poll yesterday. And all of the people, I should say most of the people at our caucus, were soft in their choice. They were still shopping for a candidate. They picked one for last night. But, you know, and I think there's a lot of that in the straw poll, soft votes. Obviously, there's a certain number who voted uncommitted, but a lot of the votes are soft. And with six candidates last night on the DFL side, you also saw the different things that happen when interest groups and people are divided along, you know, who are looking for a particular issue or find a particular candidate to be their favorite. You know, when there's six of them, it gets split up a lot. And you had just mentioned Rebecca Otto carrying the 8th District. She didn't just carry, she also carried the city of Ely. And if you know the whole range mining debate, you'd chuckle at that because that's fairly significant. But I think that there's a caveat that's really important, and that is people who go to precinct caucuses are not the electorate. You know, they're the people motivated, usually the people most motivated within a partisan environment to speak out. And so one of the big things that separates candidates in the 8th district is mining. And you've got both Democrats and Republicans who support mining. But you also have a number of Democrats who oppose mining, and the DFL caucuses are really one of their best opportunities to speak out, which is why Duluth and the progressives in Ely really worked hard to get out and obviously opted to go with Rebecca Otto, who is, I'd call a strong mining skeptic, at least on copper nickel mining, one of the controversial issues in our area. So, you know, Otto did not carry a majority of the 8th district, and I think if you add up all the soft votes for the other candidates, you'd see that, you know, she doesn't have clear sailing in the 8th district, but she certainly had a good night here for her purposes on Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, what I've been hearing from various caucus goers was, I want to vote for the candidate who's going to win. You know, right. I think that's okay, that's a given. But everybody starts sizing people up based on various issues and how they think they might match up against Republicans. But when you start doing that right now, you have no idea who the Republicans are going to put up because Jeff Johnson, you know, got the most votes last night. Mm-hmm. But the two candidates who might end up being the Republican endorsement, you know, or candidate who's running in November could be Tim Pawlenty. It could be our current Speaker of the House, Kurt Daut. So I don't know if people's choices start changing when they start thinking about who they might be running against. It might not be Jeff Johnson. It might be somebody with a bigger name, a bigger statewide appeal.
Right. And, you know, and different ideological, you know, Tim Pawlenty, and we can talk about the Republican side if you want, but Pawlenty is an interesting case because I think a lot of the precinct caucus voters who would have gone out for the Republicans last night were less interested, would be less interested in Tim Pawlenty, but Tim Pawlenty's strength would be in a primary, I think, and name recognition, and because more moderate Republicans would have no problem going into a ballot box and voting for Tim Pawlenty, but standing up in a very, very partisan, very, very conservative room of 12 people who are, you know, very strongly opinionated probably wouldn't sit well. So I don't know. I think that's why Pawlenty is waiting to announce until after this straw poll, because it could be Tim Pawlenty. But you mentioned about the electability argument. You know, I think Tim Walz is kind of carrying that banner on the DFL side of the most electable Democrat. And he didn't do as well in the 8th district as he did elsewhere in the state. But he did have a pretty universal, consistent showing across Minnesota. He never got blown out anywhere. Rebecca Otto did well up here compared to him, but I kind of see Walz was the front runner, remains the front runner. He's getting the front runner attention from both the Republicans and his other candidates. Rebecca Otto is now, I think, standing alone as the liberal, as the progressive, the most progressive, the environmental choice, and she's got that side of the electorate, and then I think you've got room for one more, and just going up by the numbers, I'd say Aaron Murphy kind of coasted into that bronze medal spot, got on the podium, you know, and I wrote this morning, you know, she outpolled her former speaker and Paul Thiessen, her House colleague and Tina Liebling, and the mayor of her hometown, Chris Coleman. And she actually beat, I think, Chris Coleman in St. Paul. I didn't crunch all those numbers, but it looked like she did, and at least in the 4th district. And Murphy, I think, is a potential compromise candidate if it comes to a endorsing convention fight. And I don't think she's there yet in terms of saying, oh, she's definitely going to win. But I think she kind of earned the right to carry on here as someone, you know, vying for that endorsement.
Let's talk about Chris Coleman just for a moment, though, because he really underperformed in his hometown. And he's the only one of all of these candidates who hasn't explicitly said, I am going to abide by the DFL endorsement. I mean, I look at this, I see signals that A, he's not going to get an endorsement, and B, he's been raising a lot of money. Does that, in your mind, does that mean C, that he's likely, Chris Coleman, to be running in the primary?
Well, it's possible. You know, the DFL, typically this has been the issue, especially with the governor's race. It almost always spills into a primary, doesn't it? Somebody decides, I'm going to take my chances in the general or in the primary election against the, especially if the endorsed candidate is perceived to have any weaknesses. And so Coleman, it's kind of interesting how he did not perform very well among the activists, and he's not necessarily extremely well known outside of the Twin Cities. He's an interesting candidate. He got kind of a high profile endorsement from the Duluth mayor, Emily Larson, before the caucuses, but I'm not real sure how that goes unless, if somebody like Rebecca Otto wins the endorsement, then there's room for a labor/development/a moderate candidate in the DFL spectrum. And then you could look at a Chris Coleman as maybe trying to fill that role, especially if the others have all agreed to abide by the endorsement.
Let's take it over here.
I think Tim Walz is as likely to do that as Chris Coleman.
Let's take it over to the Republican side here. We touched on this already with Tim Pawlenty lurking out there, and Kurt Dowd today saying he hasn't shut the door on this whole thing. Let's talk about Tim Pawlenty, who is leaving his job in Washington, D.C. How is he going to play back here in Minnesota, you think, if he was running?
Well, I mean, the negative ad rates itself in a lot of ways. He has been a Wall Street bank lobbyist. He's been out of the estate. And so he does not fit the normal zeitgeist of where people are. You know, even the Republican Party with Donald Trump has become more populist in a sense, you know, in terms of how the candidates are shaping up and how they shape their campaign messages. It's nobody's out there running to be with the bankers or the Wall Street people. So I think Tim Pawlenty will suffer both on the Republican primary side or endorsement fight. Most likely he'd run in a primary. And the question I have about that is are there any other Republicans, an endorsed Republican, let's say it's Jeff Johnson, let's say Jeff Johnson wins that endorsement, can Jeff Johnson beat Tim Pawlenty in a primary? I don't know. It would take some finagling, I think, to imagine that. But the other thing about Tim Pawlenty is he did get elected twice in this state, and yeah, there's all sorts of caveats about the third party factor in both of those elections, and but he showed a lot of political skill too in wiggling out of, you know, I remember in 2002 the campaign scandal right before the election looked like he was toast, and he ended up winning the thing. And then he would look doomed in 2006. The whole everything went DFL, except for some reason Pawlenty wiggled out of that one too. So he's got some skill. He's not necessarily afraid of a tough election. So, you know, I just don't know if Minnesota wants to go, you know, the other thing, in addition to the Wall Street stuff, you get to say, hey, you know, under Dayton, we had all these surpluses and the budget was balanced and Pawlenty was constant deficits and all this. So,
and bridge, you know, and a bridge falling down.
The bridge fell down, and he divested the tobacco endowment and all these other things you can run against Tim Pawlenty on. So I don't know if, you know, he's kind of like somebody who everybody knows. He was the governor, but on the other hand, I don't know if anybody's in a high hurry to go back to that. You know, there's not a lot of nostalgia. You know, it's a little different than, for instance, down in Iowa where Terry Branstad came back to after being a Republican governor for many years and then went away, and then he came back and was very popular. But I think he was seen, I think, differently than Tim Pawlenty in Minnesota.
Yeah, definitely. And how about the rest of these Republican candidates? Was last night kind of just, you know, hey, close the door, they're toast?
Like I wrote, you know, Giuliani Stevens from Woodbury is new to the race. She didn't really show much. I think this Philip Parrish is kind of you could see him running a kind of an outsider campaign on the right. He was, I think, third. Keith Downey, I just don't know where he goes from here. He needed to do a lot better, I think, just because he was a higher profile name in the Republican Party. I just don't see it for a lot of those candidates. But, you know, I remember the Republican convention where Chris Dahlberg was the darn near the Republican endorsee for U.S. Senate here a few years ago against what's his name, McFadden, and that almost happened. So the Republican convention actually, I think, could be a lot of, actually both conventions could have a lot of sparks, and some of these candidates might emerge with the endorsement. But like I said, it's hard to imagine, maybe Jeff Johnson, but it's hard to imagine the others besting Pawlenty or Doubt in a primary.
Yeah, the DFL and Republican conventions are on the same day, opposite sides of the state. So it will challenge the media in covering those things.
Right.
I want to talk. We just got a couple minutes left here. I want to talk about the 8th congressional district because obviously Rick Nolan running again. He always faces a tough challenge in a what's been a swing district here the last couple of cycles. This time he's getting a challenge from within the party. What's going on with that? Because I've heard all sorts of rumblings and people being upset. Talk to me.
Yeah, well, and I've got to constantly refresh because today's been a really busy day for that. So Leah Pfeiffer, former FBI and Homeland Security intelligence analyst, who left her job with the with Homeland Security and the FBI to run for office. She's from Ashanti County, Minnesota, Ashanti the town, and she's originally from Two Harbors. That's where she was raised, up in on the North Shore of northern Minnesota. So she's got, you know, this profile of being from two parts of this big district, and she wanted to run kind of a new generation to run against Nolan, who was in his 70s, and she wants to also kind of capitalize on a lot of the anger against Rick Nolan from DFL activists, especially environmental activists, over his support of these, you know, really Republican-driven deregulation bills related to mining and environmental laws. And so so there's this anti, kind of angry at Nolan, mad at Nolan, left flank thing, and Leah Pfeiffer comes along and she wants to get the endorsement kind of backed by the different people who might oppose Nolan. Well, that's one way to look at this. I probably did all right with delegates, at least early on, because Otto did well in the 8th, and Liebling is another one who had a mining opposition as a major part of her plank. So we don't know how many delegates Leah Pfeiffer might command at the county conventions and how many might eventually go to the congressional convention. But today she got some blowback, some pushback, over her intelligence community background, and particularly as it relates to immigration, her work with ICE, with immigration law. And she had written an op-ed back a few years ago, not that long ago, for MinnPost, in which she was, right after Trump actually got elected, which she was supporting ICE agents in their work because of the important work that they do. And we look at this immigration issue and we should be thinking about immigration policy, because that's how you fix it. Don't take it out on ICE and the agency. Well, that is not sitting well with people in the DFL coalition, who look at this immigration issue and look at ICE as overreaching its bounds and doing really awful things and deporting and humiliating undocumented immigrants, who many of whom have been in the country for decades. And so she's now having to step up and answer these questions. And really, it just started today, right after the day after the caucus. So the argument against her in this instance is she really the one to run to the left of Nolan when, at least on immigration, she appears to be to the right of Nolan?
Yeah. It's never a dull moment in the 8th Congressional District. That's
for sure.
We'll
see how it goes.
Yeah. Aaron, we got to run, but you can find Aaron Brown, his writings over at MinnesotaBrown.com. He has his own radio show up there on the Iron Range, and we occasionally get him in here on the show for some great analysis. Aaron, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah.
We're going to take a break here, but folks have been calling in wanting to talk about Donald Trump's military parade. We'll play back some of the comments. You got some? 952-946-6205. It's the Mike McEntee Show. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. The Blue State Ball is back. Hi, it's Mike McEntee. AM 950's annual get-together of like-minded progressives is March 10th at the Blaisdell in Minneapolis. And I will be there and look forward to talking with you. But we've got much bigger stars on the program. The voices you hear here every day, Tom Hartman, Norman Goldman, and of course, our own Matt McNeil. Plus, expect lots of big-name political guests and candidates. It's always a great time, and tickets are on sale now at am950radio.com. Come join us and celebrate the resistance and the excitement building towards the 2018 elections. General admission is just $35 and gets you in at 7 p.m. or come early at 5:30 p.m. with a VIP ticket for $100. Drop by and say hi to me, Matt, Norman, and Tom. The Blue State Ball is March 10th. Get tickets at am950radio.com and be part of the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hi, Matt McNeil from AM 950. I bought my newest Sienna from Rudy Luther Toyota in July, and I'm so in love with it. It's comfortable if I'm running the kids to activities or on a longer road trip. It's safe with backup cameras, blind spot protection, and the safety features Toyotas are known for. And it's fun with the bells and whistles, EcoDrive, sunroof, and so much more. I love my new Rudy Luther Toyota Sienna. Stop into Rudy Luther and test drive one yourself at 394 and 169, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis.
Welcome back to the Mike McIntyre Show here on AM 950. We got just a couple of minutes. We want to get your comments in here at 952-946-6205. Donald Trump would like a military parade, just like he saw in France. And yeah, they're actually working on it right now. And people have been calling in. Here's some comments on that.
That parade in France is all about France defeating the Nazis and pushing them back out of their country. So it's ironic that he wants a parade like that. I hope they do an anti-KKK Nazi parade. Haha. Anyway, thanks for listening. It's Mary Kinney from Shakopee. Thank you.
Now, one of our callers sees this as an excellent opportunity for comedy.
I'm all for Trump having a parade, except instead of the military, they could have clowns and court jesters in little cars driving up and down, and we could get a golden throne imitation, of course, for Trump to sit on with a scepter and a robe on. And I just can't believe the comedy writers haven't jumped all over this along with the newspaper people. But that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
What do you think? Hey, Walt is on the line. He wants to talk about this, too. Hi, Walt. What's your thoughts?
Thank you for your work. And my modest proposal is that this parade be held in Red Square in Moscow, and that President Putin can review the troops, and the squatter at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue can stand a pace or two behind and applaud wildly.
Okay. I get your point there. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I get your point. Well, thank you for the comment there. All right. Mattis, the defense secretary, was asked to explain this today. It didn't really go over well.
Can you talk about where things are on the planning stage? I just did a military parade, the president is seeking, and what any cost estimates you have at this point are?
As I think we're all aware in this country of the president's affection and respect for the military. We've been putting together some options. We'll send them up to the White House for decision.
A question about North Korea, but just a follow-up on Kathleen's question there. You just laid out the argument for fully funding the military, why you think every dollar counts. So why divert time, energy, financial resources to the planning of a parade, as the president has asked?
Again, I think that what my responsibility is to make certain I lay out the strategy and make the argument for the oversight of Congress to make a determination of fully funding us. As far as the parade goes, again, the president's respect, his fondness for the military, I think is reflected in him asking for these options.
Yeah. You know, there are four Democratic senators who say spend the money on the military instead. Honor them that way. You know, take care of them. Take care of the vets. That's it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow. Mike McIntyre. See you then.